PBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me, and we're going to recap Michigan's 63-10 victory over Northern Illinois. Obviously, with the lopsided nature of the game, this will kind of be more of a big picture episode. We're not going to get into the nitty gritty of each position group because, frankly, everyone did well. I mean, I do my grades every week. I try to go into pretty good detail on those grades. This week, it might be pretty easy. Not really sure any group's not getting an A. It was a demolition, a clinic. Lots of cool words you could use there. They could have won this game 90-3 if they wanted to. And that's not like a stretch either. Like, I genuinely think they could have. So we'll also take a look at where this team is at through three non-conference games and what that means heading into Big Ten play. But first, we can stick with this game specifically. Steve, what was your biggest takeaway from this game? Whether it was something that surprised you, something that really stood out to you, what are you leaving this game thinking the most about?
Two things, I guess. One, not a surprise, but kind of what we talked about before we recorded. Blake Corum's a special player. You know, it's when you're watching a game where one team is dominating as much as Michigan did today, sometimes it can kind of be difficult to really draw anything out, you know, from the performance, because it's clear one team's just got better players, the coaching is better, like everything's better across the board. But Blake Corum still does things, or did things today, within the context of the game that I think are opponent independent. Just his vision, his cut a bit, like the way he runs the football is special. I think Michigan has a special player and a guy that I think you said was he on pace for 1,400 right now. Not say I don't think he'll get there, just because the opponents will be more difficult. He'll continue to split carries with Hassan Haskins as well. But, you know, Blake Corum just looks like a special football player. Second thing, too, is the role that it looks like Daylon Baldwin is going to play. He 100% healthy now. I think they even mentioned during the telecast, and it's something that we had reported coming off of game one, slightly bum ankle at the end of fall camp. So it wasn't 100%, but, you know, made the big play on the J.J. McCarthy throw in game one, was targeted consistently today. And looks like, you know, he looks like a guy that's going to be a factor for Michigan at the receiver position going forward. So, you know, we saw the usual suspects without Ronnie Bell. We saw, you know, obviously Cornelius Johnson with the long touchdown catch, Roman Wilson, ton of playing time, A.J. Henning, really a threat running the ball, catching the ball, or returning the ball. But Daylon Baldwin is the guy that got a lot of targets today and nearly, I think he still had three or four grabs, right? But the one catch that was, I think, called pass interference, but is a guy that, A, it looks like Cade McNamara is comfortable throwing the ball to, and B, just looks like a guy that's going to play a lot of snaps. So those are probably the two biggest things. Defensively, I don't know. It's hard to tell how much to take away out of a game like this. That was sort of what we expected to an extent. So Michigan was dominant on that side of the ball. But offensively, you know, like I said, I think Corum, special player, and it looks like Daylon Baldwin might play a bigger role than maybe casual fan or even we maybe thought going into the season.
Yeah, those are both good ones. I'll talk about Corum in a second. But if I am looking at the defense and trying to round out our collective takeaways, I think the one thing that Northern Illinois is not a good team. They went 0-6 last season. They did beat Georgia Tech earlier this season, and they scored 43 points on Wyoming. But I think the one thing I was very curious about going into the game was if Michigan could eliminate the big plays. I mean, that was, I don't need to act like they're the same team as Rocky Lombardi was playing for last year, but that was something that he did well. You know, Tyrese Ritchie, I believe is his name. He's a very good wide receiver. You know, their running back entered the game third in the country in yards per game. Harrison Whaley. I mean, he was, I think, 160 yards per game through two games. But so I was really curious about the big play defense. And there was one drive where Michigan gave up a few big plays, but other than that, there was really nothing. You know, I'm kind of taking a peek at the box score here. I'm only seeing four plays of more than 10 yards. That's really, really impressive over the, you know, a team that conducted 53 total plays. And so I think if there was one takeaway from the defense, because you're right, it wasn't like there was no one particular player that stood out or one particular position group that seemed to do it, but it seemed like a very consistent and I guess comprehensive effort from the defense. There was that one drive where they seemed a little bit on their heels. They were missing tackles. They were struggling to get off blocks. And then they responded. And, you know, again, we kind of expected them to do well against Northern Illinois, but that was Northern Illinois is supposed to be a better offensive team than defensive team. So to me, I felt like Michigan's ability to erase the big plays, pretty low mistake game, another one. Easier to do against a MAC team, but that's still somewhat opponent neutral. Are you making fundamental mistakes that are causing penalties? Last season, the answer was yes. This year, seems like so far Michigan is a little bit cleaner on the defensive side of the ball, in addition to being a little bit more consistent and complete. And I agree with you on Corum. I think he's going to end up leading the country with 8 touchdowns after this weekend. We'll see how a couple other games shake out. He entered this game leading the country in all-purpose yards, which includes special teams yards along with rushing and receiving yards. Yeah, just kind of the optimal situation of what we forecasted before the season. We talked about his speed. We talked about his strength. We talked about how he's described as one of the team's fastest players, but also one of the team's biggest gym rats. And that usually bodes well. But to see it manifest on the field in the way that it has, I think is really very early, but I would argue Michigan's best skill player contributions. Can I say this since Denard? Is that allowed? Is it too soon to say that? But if you look and think about receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, there hasn't been one that has kind of entered the national Heisman conversation. It's maybe not Heisman conversation, but entered that maybe like who's the best player in the Big Ten. Because Steve, you and I, before the show, we had a very serious debate about Blake Corum potentially being the best running back in the Big Ten. And it's a long season. I understand that fans maybe don't want the September hyperbole yet, or that this guy's the best since this, or this guy's the best in the country. That's fine. They haven't really played that many stout opponents yet. But so far, I'm with you, Steve. I think this looks Corum's play looks opponent neutral, and I think the big plays, the explosive plays, are gonna be there against other Big Ten teams.
Can we give Cade McNamara some credit today too? Again.
No.
No, we can't.
Just kidding.
No.
I'm just kidding. No.
Again, okay, I'm going to go back a little bit on what I said. You can see some things. He's quick release, comfortable in throwing the ball downfield, right? You know, I think, and again, we know Northern Illinois, not a very good team. But as we said going into last week's game, Washington could very well be the best defensive backfield that Michigan faces all season. Two NFL first round mocks at corner. Not sure where their safeties project, but when you're playing them 15, 20 yards deep, you're not going to throw the ball downfield. So not a situation where McNamara is afraid to throw down the field. I think they did it multiple times today. He just missed Cornelius Johnson on a different throw. You know, so I thought it was a reassuring. I would describe, yeah, that's how I describe it, as a reassuring performance from McNamara today. Bodes well into going into conference play with Rutgers coming into town next week.
Yeah, I think McNamara's game, one incompletion was just a throwaway. You know, he got hurried. And then the other two were on 40-plus yard passes in traffic to Cornelius Johnson. And so you could argue that maybe there's room to improve, but honestly, those throws are pretty much 50-50 no matter who's playing quarterback at the college level. I mean, there are all Big Ten players who those throws are broken up or incomplete. I think one fans wanted a pass interference call as well. So yeah, he did his job, which again, if Michigan can say Cade McNamara did his job 9 times this year, I think so far they've been able to say it twice, Michigan's going to a New Year's Six Bowl. I mean, they don't need him to win the Heisman or contend for first team all Big Ten for Michigan to be good this season. They have Corum, as we mentioned, Hassan Haskins, Donovan Edwards looked pretty good today too. 86 yards on 8 carries, 2 touchdowns. So yeah, I thought it was a nice bounce back game for McNamara. And this is that, I think they probably could have thrown a little bit more, but I think they accomplished the goal Michigan did that we mentioned before this game, is that this is a game where Michigan should be building some of that chemistry, building some of that rapport between a relatively inexperienced quarterback and a even more relatively inexperienced receiver room. I think we saw a little bit of that today, and just testing out things like Cornelius Johnson's double move or Baldwin on these you know, kind of 5-yard things where he can get some yards after the catch. So felt like the passing game took a step forward today. Anyways, yeah, pretty much everyone looked good. So let's open the picture up a little bit. Michigan went 3-0 in non-conference play. They blew everybody out, arguably. It was 47-14 against Western Michigan. It was 31-10 against Washington, and then 63-10 against Northern Illinois. I know there's something to be said. Western Michigan beat Pitt today. Northern Illinois beat Georgia Tech a couple weeks ago. There's something to be said about it. It's obviously not going to be that tough of a non-conference slate in retrospect. Washington doesn't look like a team that's going to end up being ranked. Western Michigan, Northern Illinois is as good as they might be for a Power 5 upset here and there. It's not going to compare to the teams Michigan plays in Big Ten play. But in terms of what we expected heading into the season versus what we learned in non-conference play, Steve, what is maybe the biggest thing that you learned about Michigan in these last 3 games?
I'm going to go with the offensive line, because I think they are becoming what we predicted they could become, right? I mean, that was our, when we previewed the offensive line, the gist of it was that the talent, they had the talent, the depth, the experience, but we actually needed to see it. I think we're seeing it. I mean, that's what I tweeted during the game, is like, how many shoestring tackles did Northern Illinois have today? I mean, Michigan was close to breaking about 4 or 5 more huge plays because of the Mack truck holes.
Yeah, they were.
That the Michigan offensive line was providing for the running backs, and even like some plays in the passing game as well. So we're kind of seeing it come together offensively. I mean, that the thing is, the one thing that I keep going back to, not about the passing game, it's not about the between the tackles running game. It's that, well, okay, let me, the fact that they can run in between the tackles as effectively as they have is finally opening up those reverses and end around things that Michigan's been trying to do under Harbaugh for how long. And when you have an AJ Henning or a Roman Wilson, like, those plays are going to become more and more effective because of Michigan's ability with Corum and Haskins to just run the football. And the ability to kind of have a multifaceted run attack is going to open so many more things up for Michigan, whether they want to run or throw the ball. So seeing them up front just mash. I mean, even the Cornelius Johnson touchdown, I think that was as much offensive line driven as any play in the game. I mean, McNamara was able to sit back there and comfortably, you know, throw the football to an open receiver down the field because he had a massive pocket to step into and make the throw. So feels like Michigan's offensive line looks as good as I've seen him under Harbaugh, which was apparently blasphemy in the preseason stuff that we talked about because of the guys that they put out a couple of years ago, you know, with the Bredesen and Runyon and Ruiz, and who are all great offensive linemen, are still in the NFL. But this, it just felt like that there was a chance for this offensive line to be special. The Sherrone Moore hire or promotion looks really good, you know, and it all kind of culminates into the, like, the excitement that they seem to be, that the team seems to be enjoying themselves more too. Not to really segue into a totally different thing, but that unit and their performance and the excitement about their performance kind of seems to be, I don't know, setting the tone, I suppose, for everybody else. You know, I think of the some of the reaction yet the last week on the sidelines when Michigan was just mashing the football. I think that stuff, like, really gets guys fired up and is something that they can carry with them throughout the rest of the season as they continue to do it. So really impressed with them up front. I mean, there's just no other way to put it. Even the guys they've put in late, you know, like, even Greg Crippen looked good last week against Washington as a true freshman. And Trente Jones has, I know he had a holding call today, but either way, like, he's looked solid. Reese Atterbury has had some good snaps. Like, they just look deep up front, and it just it goes to show how much good offensive line play can open things up for everybody else.
Yep. No, I agree. Gonna pat ourselves on the back a little bit there. I think one of my bold predictions for the year was that Michigan would have a 2018-esque offensive line resurgence, and that running the ball would be a strength. I didn't think they'd have almost 1,200 yards or 1,100 yards through three games, but you're right. They're mashing. They look deep. That second string offensive line, if I'm not mistaken, was in for a couple of those touchdown runs and was just still beating up Northern Illinois. Can take the grain of salt with that if you like, but the line has passed every test so far. I'm going to go on the other side. I did not expect Michigan's defensive front to look this improved. I thought that they would be improved. I mean, it certainly felt like with Aiden Hutchinson and Josh Ross, you know, healthier, a little bit leaner, felt like that would help. Felt like an older Mozzie Smith, older Chris Hinton. You know, once you start hearing the hype about Nakai Hill-Green, you're kind of thinking, okay, the group could be better than last year. I think the group looks pretty good. Really curious to see that Wisconsin game now. Granted, it's a couple weeks away, but I'm now looking at that and thinking, well, they're big. They have a lot of new contributors, guys like Jalen Harrell, who got his first career start today. David Ajabo has done pretty well. Chris Jenkins, I thought, had a really nice game against Washington. You know, Mike Morris has gotten some pretty good run, even if the box score stats aren't anything outrageous. Feels like not only has the group improved on an individual, like each individual player has improved, the scheme, the pass rushing scheme, the run stopping scheme just seems to fit this group more. And it really makes you, we'll see, maybe in a month we can revisit this, but it really makes you wonder just how bad of a fit or how predictable Michigan's previous front seven schemes were last season. And so, yeah, I think there's some credit due to Sean Nua. I think he got the group bigger. Mike McDonald certainly deserves credit too. Got the group bigger, you know, kind of got the edges and the tackles to work really well together. This defense looks ahead of schedule, and I think there's improvements in the secondary that are noteworthy. But to me, I think the fact that the front seven and that defensive line look you know, adequate, serviceable, like something Michigan can work with. I think that's been something that of all the things that happened so far this season that, you know, I didn't see coming, that's the one that surprised me the most. The other one, and Steve, I want to get your thoughts on this because obviously you covered how this class came together. Michigan's 2020 class is starting to really kind of poke its head out there as a truly elite recruiting haul for Michigan. Guys like Corum, AJ Henning, who has maybe been another breakout player like Corum this season. You know, Harrell Jenkins, RJ Moten, Kai Hill Green, Zach Zinter. If I'm forgetting someone who's contributing quite a bit, feel free to jump in with a name or two. But really, you're starting to see guys play really well, and that not just play well, but put veteran guys on the bench. I mean, that does not happen a ton in college football, even on teams that practice the meritocracy like Michigan and Jim Harbaugh do. I mean, it's not too often that someone who started one fall is almost, you almost don't even see or hear from them the following fall because a redshirt freshman or a sophomore is just playing that well. But that's where Michigan's at. And it seems like pretty much every position group, save for, I guess quarterback, has a second year player, a guy who did not get a spring season in 2020. If they enrolled early, didn't get a conventional fall camp, wasn't able to like really get into a rhythm of practice, didn't get that first summer of off-season training, but they did get that taste of college football, and they got a bitter taste with a 2-4 start. Next thing you know, they attack this off-season, and suddenly they're key contributors on the team. So to me, I think that's something I'm kind of keeping an eye on, and it almost makes me wonder, well, who else is in that 2020 class? Like, are there more? Are there other players that can step up and play pretty significant roles this season? So that, you know, in addition to the offensive line, the defensive line has surprised me a little bit. And that 2020 class, not a huge surprise. I mean, there were, I felt like that was a pretty well scouted class. I think the context of basically everyone getting a redshirt year to kind of get their feet wet academically, you know, they weren't necessarily thrown into the fire. They got to go at their own speed, and now they're at full speed. But yeah, that 2020 class, suddenly, I mean, that was the best case scenario for Michigan, is younger players coming in and really, without sounding like a jerk or trying to sound like a jerk, putting veteran starters in reserve or bench roles. I think that's really significant for Michigan if they really want to make a leap this season.
Athletes, right? At least the guys that are contributing. Talk about RJ Moten, Henning, even Braden McGregor, you know, is finally healthy. That was a thing. You know, I think he's a guy that maybe, well, okay, I shouldn't say would have seen snaps last year because no young player saw snaps last year, but a guy, if this defensive staff had been in place, he probably would have seen snaps last season. That's really kind of the big theme. Obviously, Corum, like Corum goes without saying at this point, but on the it's because a lot of the emergers have been on the defensive side, right? And that is a lot of what we had talked about 1,000 times. Because the guys that played last year that were freshmen, what, all of them offensive? Roman Wilson, Zach Zinter, Corum, Henning, those guys were all offensive players.
Yeah, Page played a little bit.
A smidge, right? And that was almost out of desperation. They were banged up at safety and just mm-hmm. didn't really have anybody. But this season, we're immediately Chris Jenkins, another one. So, and Amon Dennis is a guy I'm interested in. Like, he's an athlete. I'm interested to see if Michigan can find a role for him because I think they still think he's got a shot. We did see a healthy amount of Matthew Hibner today too, but no, I think the biggest thing when you talk about 2020, I think the biggest thing is they've let some of the athletes on the defensive side start to shine a little bit. And I think it's been a microcosm of where the shift has been, because if we're being honest, the guys that are making an impact on the as true freshmen this year have been mostly on the defensive side. We talk about Colson, Rod Moore, you know, the guys that we've seen a little bit more than the other guys are on the defensive side of the ball. So I think that's really my biggest takeaway as far as that goes with the 2020 deal, because yeah, because Michigan was offensively was not afraid to throw those guys out there. I mean, think about it. Last year against Minnesota, opening drive, first play of the season went to Blake Corum, and Roman Wilson was on the field. And Zach Zinter played a ton, right? So I always, like we said, it was more of the situation where it was one side of the ball was not afraid to play guys early. The other side of the ball seemed deathly afraid to put guys on the field before they're like their second or third year on campus. So, I mean, we even read stories a couple of years ago about it was taking Daxon Hill a while to, you know, talk about like the bridge program and that, you know, he's getting acclimated to the defense, where it's like a guy like Daxon Hill would have been playing day one at Alabama or Ohio State or Clemson or wherever. So that
yeah, stuff, it wouldn't have been sorry to interrupt.
No, you're like fine.
There wouldn't have been, oh, he's got to figure out the defense. It would have been, no, he's playing. He's playing. He's one of the best athletes in the world.
Yeah.
He's out there, whether he makes mistakes or not. This defense will figure out a way to make him an impact player.
Exactly. And that's, and we're seeing that now. And I think where I think it should be refreshing for Michigan fans is that Michigan has always recruited like elite athletes. The question was more about them acclimating themselves to the college game. And that was what was so weird under Brown was they were recruiting guys who were plus athletes, but maybe hadn't quite refined the football side of things. But instead of them allowing them to learn it on the field, it was like a little bit of a slower process. Like, you know, now we're seeing a little bit more of an expedited baptism by fire, like we talked about last week, especially I think with Rod Moore, where it's like, I don't think you or I would have ever predicted we'd see Rod Moore covering Washington's number one receiver in the second game of his, you know, since he's been on campus. Right. We would have never seen that last year. So that's like been a welcome transition. And that's one area, like specifically with the 2020s on defense, where it's like, let these guys go. Let them, you know, I got to think, and this is where maybe I'll do a little more digging personally. You know, are they letting them just play football? And I know that sounds like a really simple, like dumb way to say it, but are they just letting these guys run, letting them learn? You know, how is the coaching staff approaching it with these younger guys? Whereas the last staff would have been a much more touch and go, slow approach. Where is the new staff going with it? Where it's, you know, just let them get on the field, let them learn, let them figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I asked Mike McDonald about it the other day. He wasn't going to throw the previous defense under the bus, but kind of reiterating, I guess, Jim Harbaugh's approach is competition should be a good thing. And if a player is coming in and making plays, how can the coaching staff convert that into being a good player? So those are two separate things, but they're very connected if your program is one that's built on development and production. We're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk, key remaining questions, along with, are there changed expectations for this season for the Michigan football team? You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for waiting. Steve, not a ton of questions after a 3-0 start that was pretty lopsided. I guess the big obvious question is, will it work against better teams? But any more specific questions you have about this team heading into conference play?
It is a tough one because they've looked so crisp, right? You know, because my thing is, I don't know if we really know what Wisconsin is yet. Think Penn State, Auburn, we'd learn more about Penn State. That may tell us more about Wisconsin, if that makes any sense to anybody listening. Just that, you know, Wisconsin whooped on Eastern Michigan last week. I don't think that really means a ton. I still want to see, you know, the consensus seems to be that Washington's offensive line has been a huge bust and a huge disappointment so far. So I am interested to see what Michigan match up against like a Wisconsin up front. I think that'll be fascinating. We'll go a long ways because it does still feel like Wisconsin's passing game is very stoppable. Otherwise, I guess it really still is. Can Michigan, because it feels like Michigan, they're not going to run for 300 yards every Saturday. We know that. That's obviously, but it's hard to imagine them not being able to run the ball effectively. I don't know who's left on the schedule where I don't feel like they can. So I think there's still that lingering idea is, can they still move the ball down the field in the passing game to have that push-pull balance and keep 7.5 guys, let's say, out of the box.
Sure.
Right. So, I mean, that'd be really the only major thing. I'd like to see, and again, they won 63-10. Still like to see them get the tight ends and a little bit more involved in the passing game. I think that would be a big benefit for them. Receiver-wise, you know, Cornelius Johnson, if they just throw him the ball more, he's going to catch it. That's like kind of the way I feel. I know you feel the same way. He's your guy. He was your breakout pick. He looked great today. So that it's not a situation necessarily where it's like not questioning the receivers, just more wondering if can Michigan effectively move the ball down the field. One teams start to respect that running game, which it feels like they're going to have to, you know, and that's where this team is so enticing, because if you feel like you can effectively run the ball, that means you're going to have opportunities in the passing game. So I think there's still that idea is in a big game and against legit defense or in a tough road environment, can McNamara still move the ball down the field? I think that's really going to be, probably the biggest question. That, and like I said, the defensive front still want to see, again, in a bigger game and maybe in a road environment, see how they kind of handle things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one, just since we're on the defensive front, only 1.5 sacks from the defensive front from players not named Aiden Hutchinson through three games, in three games in which they were facing a lot of passing plays. So seems like there's more push. Closing out on those pushes though is pretty important. Can't just be Ross on third downs and Aiden Hutchinson relatively consistently. Like there has to be a little bit more of a push there. Yeah, I'm with you on the passing game. I guess can they pass to win? Because I think they can throw the ball. That seems pretty apparent. I think these discussions of Cade McNamara as if he is a 2017 caliber. This is a 2017 type passing game. I don't buy that. I think they'll be able to pass the ball consistently. He did it against a couple Big Ten teams last year, has looked pretty good this year. And I will say they won't run for 300 yards in every single game this year, this is the best running game Michigan has had that I can honestly remember. And now my recall is only about a decade since I, you know, really started like noticing that kind of stuff. But
Zach, they've already run for more yards than they did all of last year.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. So, almost 1,100. Yeah.
That's, you know, I don't get that is that's opponent independent.
Well, so it is and it isn't just because they were trailing so much last season.
I understand.
But I'm with you in, I mean, their efficiency, even when they were playing MAC teams or non-conference games in 2015 and 2016, I guess 2017, they had a pretty good ground game. You know, they weren't running like this. It wasn't three players having multiple rushing touchdowns. It wasn't Michigan having three guys who could probably run for 150 yards if Michigan gave him the ball 20 times. And say what you will about Washington, I'm not convinced that they are some putrid defense. Like, that's, to me, I think that is among the top five or six defenses Michigan will face this season. It is. I guess we'll see, but that's my personal opinion. Having watched them last season, watching them against Montana, watch them against Michigan. I think they have size, they have strength. So I don't think they need to be a 300-yard passing type of team, but can they be 200 when they need 200? Not just against Northern Illinois, but against a Wisconsin, against a Michigan State, against a Penn State, in those types of games that they could honestly go either way. And so Michigan's going to have to throw the ball a little bit, because all three of those teams are consistently top 15, top 20 in run defense. And that's not even to mention Ohio State. I guess, you know, we'll see. Perhaps their defense will be comparable to those other teams. But yeah, can they throw to win? They can complete a cool pass when they're up by three touchdowns. They can, you know, complete the little out routes here and there. They can kind of, they can make some passing plays and be efficient, but if the game's on the line and they don't really have time to run the ball, can they be a team that passes to win? That's a pretty significant question. Another question, I am curious about the secondary in pass coverage. I think the group, excellent tacklers. I think they're pretty good at reading plays. They're better at diagnosing stuff now. Steve, I know Rocky Lombardi, fans know him. I know Caleb Ellaby is supposed to be one of the better quarterbacks in the MAC. Is it fair to say that the group hasn't been truly tested like they might in Big Ten play so far this season? And Washington, arguably the secondary struggled in pass coverage a little bit against, you know, a passing attack that I don't think was projected to be that dangerous. So that's maybe another one, is it kind of like the passing game. They've done the job so far, but you don't know until you know. So that'd be another question that I have. Final thought in this podcast. I think we both predicted 8-4. Our record prediction might not change, but Steve, do you have any changed expectations for Michigan after what you have seen so far in non-conference play? And if they are changed expectations, what has changed your mind a little bit?
I mean, I think their play up front on both sides is going to give them a chance against anybody they play this season. Ohio State is barely beating Tulsa as we speak. Lost to Oregon last week. And they end up beating Minnesota, but that was a game for a lot longer than I think many people might have anticipated. We don't, like I said earlier, we don't know about Wisconsin necessarily. And by proxy, we don't know about Penn State. You know, we'll see how Penn State fares against Auburn. I feel like the ceiling is definitely higher for Michigan, for sure. Today, what's the best way to describe it? Again, an inferior opponent, but this kind of felt like a classic Michigan against inferior opponent type game, where they just kind of did what Michigan would do back in the day against a crap team. So
yeah, it was a boring blowout.
Right. But that's what it used to, you know, I think a lot of I'm assuming even a lot of our listeners, probably some of their best Saturday traditions are going to the classic Michigan 56-7 win over who knows who, you know, like that. That's just the way it, you know, it always was. So I think in that regard, I think it's fair to raise the expectations for the season. I don't know if that, you know, does that mean that I'm changing a pick for any specific game yet? No, but I think I'm more open to in a couple situations at this point. So, here we are, Zach. We're talking about Michigan looks way better than we thought they might, that they may have looked early this early in the season. They're more effective in a lot of areas than we thought they would. It's only fair in turn to raise the expectations a little bit. You know, I think they're probably raising their expectations, or they probably had high expectations to begin with. I don't know what team doesn't. So, I think it's a matter of, it's kind of that hallmark game by hallmark game. So they'll host Rutgers next week. Rutgers has looked good. They beat Syracuse. They beat Temple, which again for Rutgers is solid, because Rutgers teams in the past might not have won either of those games, but we still expect Michigan to win. And then you go to Madison. So this, like, if they get past that one, they'll probably win the next two games after that, Nebraska and Northwestern. Then we move on to Michigan State, where Michigan State looks good. I think Miami stinks from the quarter of that game that I watched, but it also, Michigan State also looks solid. You know, that's to win in three touchdowns on the road against a Power 5 opponent is impressive. I don't care if the team stinks or not. So either way, as far as Michigan goes, I think it's fair to raise the expectations, because I think the potential is definitely there. They have a dynamic offensive line. They have a Corum is a guy that if he was playing for a top five team right now would be the runaway favorite to win the Heisman Trophy, right? Do you agree with me there? I mean, if he was playing for a preseason top 10 team and was putting up these stats the first 3 weeks of the season, he would probably be the prohibitive favorite. Maybe alongside Bryce Young.
Yeah, I was going to say, right? Bryce Young is like, I think he's almost like 2-1 odds at this point to win the Heisman.
Yeah, no, I know, but, you know, he's
got. But I'm with you.
You understand what I'm saying.
And the thing is, Corum, he wouldn't be like lost in the rotation at right. any of those schools. He would be their go-to guy.
Right. So, you know, and then on the defensive side, I think the other thing too, and this is one big thing that I was big on going into the year. I said, if Michigan's star players can be stars, it's going to make life easier for everybody else. And so far, Aiden Hutchinson has been a star. And I feel like Daxon Hill has pretty much been a star also. And I think it's helped that defense impress and look like a type of defense that could slow enough teams or teams down enough to give the offense chances to win football games. So, you know, people can make whatever expectations they want. I would say my expectations have definitely at least been slightly raised. And the game in Madison in a couple of weeks, I think, is going to be very, very interesting, because I don't really think we know what Wisconsin is. That Wisconsin Penn State game was really weird. I don't think either offense looked comfortable, but I don't know if that's because each defense was good. It was a pretty sloppy game, in my opinion, from what I watched. And, but Michigan, they've lost five straight in Madison. And it's always a tough place to play. And we know that Michigan teams under Harbaugh have struggled on the road against legit competition. So that's going to be a fascinating game in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it will. And one thing that will be very interesting is, I think the last couple times Michigan has gone to Wisconsin, they've been pretty banged up and they've been humbled. I think each time they kind of went in confident that they would win, but there had been warning signs that it maybe wasn't a Michigan team running at full steam. And so, they took Army to overtime before they went in 2019. And then in 2017, they were down to their number three quarterback and had already lost a couple times earlier in the season. So, yeah, very, very fascinated by that. And to me, I don't think any expectations on my end will change until that game happens, just because there's so much that we don't know. As far as potential, I'm with you. I think the trench play and the improved defense that we've seen so far, to me, that raises the floor of the team. I don't think this is a team that's going to bottom out and go 6-6 or 5-7, which might sound ridiculous, but a lot of fans were actually like literally writing to us saying that that's what they expected. And it feels like a team that should comfortably get 7, 8, 9 wins somewhere in that window. Even if the best teams in the Big Ten turn out to be better, I think that it feels like they'll hold serve against teams like Rutgers at home, you know, the road game against Maryland, Northwestern, you know, those types of games are not toss-ups or anything. I mean, those seem closer to victories for Michigan. And then I'm intrigued. I'm not changing expectations, but I'm intrigued by the raised ceiling that I think Blake Corum provides Michigan, because this is a point I've made in previous podcasts in past years. Michigan really has not had a star, like a true star at quarterback or running back. Could argue since Denard Robinson, and if you want to argue from an NFL draft perspective, since Chad Henne and Mike Hart. Well, all three of those guys had pretty successful careers at Michigan and were on some of Michigan's more successful teams in the last 20 years. And it's very hard to run through college football's top teams in the last 5, 6, 7 years and not see a star quarterback or a star run, like a true star, true top 5, top 10 in their position in the entire country. Not a lot of teams that make the playoff, not a lot of teams that are in contention for the playoff can get that far without someone at quarterback or running back. And so to me, Corum, yeah, he's a little bit of an X factor for Michigan's ceiling this year. Because if he plays out of his mind or plays like one of the top 5 or 10 running backs in the country against Wisconsin, against Penn State, well, suddenly Michigan has a pretty good chance of winning those games, because those teams do not appear, at least right now, to have those kind of players to match. I mean, everyone talks about Penn State, you know, when they won the Big Ten. Well, Saquon Barkley really helped them out a lot. I mean, they're not winning that Big Ten, and they're not making the New Year's Six the next year without Saquon Barkley. Jonathan Taylor had a similar impact to Wisconsin. And even though they've had great quarterback play, I think J.K. Dobbins and Zeke Elliott are two guys who really helped put Ohio State over the top in previous years. So a lot of it comes down to quarterback play, but in college, especially in the Big Ten, a star running back can raise your ceiling. So far, Blake Corum seems to have that potential. So to me, I'm still waiting to see in terms of is it fair to expect Michigan to make a New Year's Six Bowl, or is it fair to expect Michigan to do blank? I still think, I mean, Penn State plays Auburn tonight, Wisconsin plays Notre Dame next week, and then Michigan and Wisconsin play. I mean, those three games will give us a very good sense of where Michigan kind of stacks in the Big Ten hierarchy, because there are some other teams. Some teams look worse, but there are some teams that look better. I think Michigan State, as you mentioned, is a big one. You know, Maryland and Rutgers are both going to be 3-0. I guess Nebraska might be on the mend after their loss to Illinois. So, you know, it's still a very tough schedule. There's still a lot of intriguing elements to this season for the Wolverines, but I think the floor is higher. I think the ceiling is higher so far through non-conference play for two very different reasons. Steve, any final thoughts on today's game or what you've seen in the first 3 weeks of the season?
Not on that. I would say this, though, especially even going back to last week, and you talk about your last point about, you know, Jonathan Taylor, J.K. Dobbins and stuff. The single biggest reason why Ohio State has dominated Michigan the last 15, however many years, is because they have ran the football down Michigan's throat in those games. Think about Beanie Wells.
Yep.
Dobbins, Elliott.
Carlos Hyde.
That is the single biggest reason why Michigan has failed continuously against Ohio State is because Ohio State has been able to run the football up the gut borderline at will at points. Mikey Weber, right? So that's, I was like, Michigan running the ball as effectively as they've been able to so far this season should be such a good thing. About it's like JT Barrett was not a great passer of the football, right? So Michigan with Kate, like, we like what Cade McNamara did today. We like what he did against Western Michigan. We don't really know what he did. The 44 yards, if they showed the stat before the game, it was like they said, it was the lowest amount of yards a Michigan quarterback has thrown for in a game since 2000. That's such an outlier stat that I think Michigan fans should maybe breathe a little bit and realize that Michigan decided they just at some point in that game, Michigan realized they could run the football at will and they just decided to, which again is a little bit of a rehash of what we talked about after that game. But offensively, I think Michigan fans should be excited as hell that this team is able to run the football against anybody just about. And I think they'll be able to that. And like I said, that goes back to the point we made in the last segment was the question will be, can they throw it? But the running game will, should be, barring something, an injury or something catastrophic almost, they should be able to run the ball effectively enough to give themselves shots in the passing game. And that's something I don't know if Michigan has had in quite a while. Because I think when Michigan has struggled offensively under Harbaugh, it has been because they have maybe almost forced the running game a little bit too much in certain situations. This season, it looks like they're going to be able to run the ball well enough to do everything else they maybe want to do. It'll just be a matter of, can they execute that? So, you know, that's why I say, like, people griping about running and not passing enough. And like we did like what they did in the passing game today, but you go back and look at the Michigan Ohio State game, which is again, Michigan Ohio State, this is what you're looking, this is what it's all about, is Ohio State has run the football down Michigan's throat almost every year. And it's been the difference in pretty much all of those games outside of the couple of the Rodriguez, the Terrell Pryor, like those were games were out of hand before halftime, but the ones that where Michigan is even remotely contended, it's been the difference in the game has been Ohio State's ability to run the football. So if you're a Michigan fan, I think you should be ecstatic that they're running the football as well as they are this early in the season.
Yeah. Yeah. All pretty valid points. And you're absolutely right. I will probably after the podcast, just gonna take some time. There's a stat out there that Michigan has only won like one game under Jim Harbaugh when they don't average at least 4 yards per carry. It's something ridiculous. I mean, it's very, part of it is just because that was the kind of offensive system they had in 2015, 2016, 2017, and I guess 2018 too. But in the Big Ten, when you're playing games in November, you've got to be able to run the football. So, get first downs, avoid third and longs, not put so much pressure on your quarterback. I mean, you do have to be able to be a team that can, I guess, run the ball to win the game. Anyways, for Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. Check out all of our stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Be sure to check in on our other podcast about basketball, which is just around the corner, and recruiting as well. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.